Today, we're looking ahead. We're sort of making some predictions as to what will be happening in food and hospitality for 2022, what's going to be going on in the kitchens and on the floor this year. Simon Evans, chef at Bangalay Dining on the south coast of New South Wales, joins me again now. Simon, good morning. Thanks for being with me.
Morning, Steph. How's it going?
Good. You sound like you're in a peppy mood this morning. I suppose it's Thursday, so you haven't, it's not a Monday, you haven't had the weekend yet. How's things?
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of, this is my hump day, I guess. Pushing on to the weekend, sunshiny.
Everything's going well down on the south coast in the restaurant?
Yeah, it's, almost through summer, plain sailing through, lots of events, lots going on, so all very exciting.
Okay, excellent. Well, now, to start off this, if people weren't with us, about a month ago, somewhere in mid-Jan, we had a chat about what were the food trends of 2021. Let's remind people quickly about what some of those ones were and the ones that you took us through.
Yeah, I mean, definitely much easier doing a retrospective like that than trying to predict the future. But we definitely saw a lot of table side service in restaurants last year. We'll continue again. That was kind of probably the big industry service side one was table side pasta mixed and sauces put together and beef tartare constructed and put on your plate.
Can I ask you, do you think that was all a trend to do with Instagrammable moments made next to the table? Like, is that where that all stemmed from? Or do you reckon,
A mix of that, definitely. Like, restaurants are, I mean, social media is so massive, video is so massive. So if there's something where everyone gets their phone, I mean, it used to be chefs didn't want, diners to have their phones at the table, but now... Now we want everyone filming things. So if you have this like Instagrammable moment during your dinner, that's just lots and lots of free advertising. And, it could go viral and your restaurant could be full for a year. So a mix of that and a mix also of sort of a little bit of nostalgia and a little bit of, it's something that was kind of very old school and adding a little bit extra value to a dining experience as well. So it wasn't just so we could get more Instagram followers.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, it does make sense, and I tell you what, you're still seeing quite a lot of it now in 2022.
Yeah, I could have predicted it as a 2022 trend as well, to be honest, because it's probably not going anywhere for the time.
I wonder, I mean, we've got to get into our predictions in a second, but I mean, the one that I've been seeing the most of is the new Italian restaurant called Amare down in Barangaroo and in Crown. And they make three different types of pasta and put three different types of pasta on your plate. And they do that all tableside. And I'm thinking to myself, as I'm not the type of person who would film that and put it on Instagram, because I don't really care about the filming of the whole pasta, three times pasta on a plate situation, I'm wondering if I'm going to sit there being really entertained or if I'm like, just feed me my pasta. Just give me my pasta. Stop making three different pastas in front of me and just give me a plate of pasta. I don't know.
Yeah, there's sort of limits to it. In some ways, you go to a restaurant and you pay for the chef to send the plates kind of fully formed to you so you can eat them. So there's definitely a balance of having a little bit of entertainment, but it not taking 20 minutes to get your food on the plate.
Yeah, you got to get it right.
So I think that's where currently it's sort of some of the better and some of the best restaurants in the country doing it. As we see maybe some of the less good ones, we'll see if it gets annoying.
Yeah, okay, cool. All right, well, stay tuned for that. Maybe that's just an extension of last year's. Is this year's prediction is worse quality, more annoying tableside service.
Yeah.
All right, let's quickly run through these last ones that we looked at previously, and then we'll get on to 2022.
Yeah, we had a return of tasting menu just due to staffing and less hours and restaurants kind of having to get as much revenue per customer as possible. Caviar bumps were massive last year. We had Basque cheesecake insanity. we found that quite entertaining over the years. Steph, we were sending each other pictures of various restaurants.
Yep. I'm still screenshotting every Basque cheesecake I see on Instagram, and they're still coming in. They're flooding in.
Thick and fast. Rise of the Murray Cod.
Yes.
The farmed Murray Cod, which was, I think, was the exciting one. It's such an amazing native fish And you were seeing it at all levels, from kind of fish and chip shops to high-end restaurants. So it's very versatile, very delicious, and very sustainable.
Yep, great. Okay, well, okay, so that's 2021. Let's start looking ahead, Simon. We've got another four today. What have we got? What are we kicking off with?
I think more and more plant-based dishes in restaurants. It's an area that is obviously increasing in popularity. In Melbourne, which has had the first hatted vegan restaurant with I forget the name now. recently, Good Food Guide. So it's something I think is going to be more popular. And also, I think people's diets are changing to where people aren't necessarily vegan, where they're kind of picking and choosing what they're eating. So it might be you eat chicken and lamb but not beef because you think beef's unsustainable, or maybe you don't eat meat main courses, just entrees, because there's less meat. So I think this reducitarianism being called, okay, where you kind of reduce your consumption of certain products for whatever reason, but kind of often a sustainability reason. So I think this is what's going to happen. I think it's going to be a bit of annoyance to chefs, because the more sort of hard to decipher people's dietary requirements are, it makes it quite hard in the past sometimes. But it's something we're probably just going to have to be ready for, really.
Okay. Yeah, no, that does make sense. Do you think that people, I mean, are people still going to have a whinge if there's not enough meat on their menu? I suppose some people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, we'll probably have the worst of it on both sides. So there'll be not enough vegetables, too much meat, not enough meat and too much vegetables. So,
right.
But I think this is just the way diners are going, where, yeah, you might, I think a lot of people kind of would like to go vegan, but they always say, oh, I'd miss eating cheese or bacon. But you can just do that. You can eat none of the meat but bacon. And like, that's fine. So I think people are kind of coming around to, you can choose your diet based on, you know, what you're comfortable eating. It doesn't have to be all in with veganism or plant-based. It can be a bit of a hodgepodge.
Yeah, and it can be whatever it is. It sort of can reflect your journey down the path of conscious eating. And it can chop and change at all times. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, what I would like to see is people, you know, questioning where the meat comes from. So someone comes in, they say, oh, I only eat grass-fed beef.
Yeah.
As much as that might sound pretentious to people, I think that'd be a great way to go. And I'd love to get that question, because I tend to only use grass-fed beef, so I find it more sustainable.
Good. Okay, well, let's move on to number two. What's the next prediction for 2022?
So last year we had the table side and the caviar bumps and all this kind of luxury. And that does tend to happen after a kind of major event. It happened after the global financial crisis as well, when I was working in the UK. So I think we're going to go maybe have a little bit of backlash to that and go back to sort of simple comfort food, nostalgic food. You're starting to see some sort of nostalgic desserts, like you know, people making Viennettas and the Bomb Alaskas and all these kind of throwback things. So I think we might have a little turn to some of that across kind of all dining styles and foods.
Tell us about, I mean, if people don't know what a Bomb Alaska is, tell us about that one, because that's an interesting dessert.
Yeah, it's kind of like a 70s party piece.
Yeah.
So it's ice cream encased in meringue, and then you basically set the meringue on fire. Not normally table side. So kind of maybe it covers both. It's a bit of a party piece, but I think some of that nostalgia with throwbacks like that, and then just kind of comfort food as well, sort of more home cooked, food that makes you feel good rather than over complex constructed dishes in some ways.
Okay, cool. It'll be interesting to see. Good prediction. What's number three? What's next?
I think restaurants are going to be opening less, which has kind of happened in a way as well, but staffing is not getting easier. So I think a lot of restaurants will start going, and you've seen it in the UK and in Europe, a lot of restaurants going to 4-day, you know, rosters for their staff, which a lot of times the only way to achieve that is to only open 4 days. It might be lunch and dinner those 4 days, or it might be breakfast, lunch and dinner those 4 days, but but definitely a lot of places opening less days. I mean, it's even now it's very hard to find a restaurant open in the city on a Monday because everyone's closing on Mondays. Mm. So I think, yeah, definitely closing more, opening less.
And you think this is all a response to the staffing issues at the moment?
I mean, a mix of the staffing issues. There's just not, until we sort of get the borders open, there's not going to be that influx of staff. And then there's got to be a way of enticing people into the hospitality industry. And because it is a tough industry inherently. So if places can offer, you know, a 4-day work week and 3 days off, that's huge. And that might be the difference between, having a full team of staff and not.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. Okay, well, it'll be interesting to see what it does for trying to get bookings and things like that, because it's still at the moment, it's still tough out there at some of the popular places to get a table anytime soon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, that's an interesting one. And, fingers crossed there's some legislative change coming that means that we can get some of our international workers back in and things like that too.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. What's up next, Simon? What's another prediction for 2022?
Ferments and fire. Nothing new in restaurants really, but I think we're going to hit peak fermenting and peak cooking over fire to the point where you won't be able to walk into any restaurant without them having a fermentation regime or department
program.
Program. Every restaurant's worth its salt will have something cooked over the hibachi, which you've seen on MasterChef. So I think that's just going to peak. It's already something that chefs have been fascinated in. And Noma released a fermentation book a couple of years ago, and that's become a staple in every kitchen. So, I mean, that was a couple of years ago. So some of these ferments take a couple of years. So maybe they'll be hitting restaurant menus pretty soon as well. The timing seems about right.
Yeah.
I think it's going to hit peak. Like, there might be like a fermentation burger on the Macca's menu or something. That's normally when you know something's peaking.
Wow, I wonder. Yeah, I actually that isn't actually too out there. That's conceivable that something like that would happen. There's something with a fermented chili or something like that on a Macca's burger.
This is you're going to start seeing it everywhere, every sort of level of restaurant, and that's kind of when you know it's permeated people's consciousness.
Yeah, it's interesting with the fire cooking that you're talking about as well. It's like, I don't know, it's one of those things where it's like, why wasn't this happening 10 years ago? Like, why did chefs not figure out that cooking meat over fire or cooking even vegetables over fire tastes better? Like, or maybe they thought it was just too hard to have some kind of fire cooking set up in the kitchen, but these hibachis are just making it so much easier. And it's like, yeah, it really is a no-brainer, isn't it, for a lot of restaurants?
Yeah, but it's a hard thing to do. It's with a gas hob, you used to be able to control temperature. Cooking over coals over the course of 3 or 4 hours during a service, the temperature constantly changes, and you don't really have a reliable way of upping and downing on a whim. So it's not the easiest thing to do during service. So that's probably been the biggest barrier. And they said the rise of the Japanese barbecue and the fact you can get one for a couple hundred bucks now means that you can have kind of one dish on and then just the popularity of TV shows like Chef's Table did a whole series on barbecue recently and a lot of restaurants using flame. So yeah, it's a massive thing. So I think you're going to see that at every restaurant now.
Yep. Okay. Well, all right. That sounds good. I'm all for that. What's last, Simon? What's last, number five, for your predictions?
Non-alcoholic drinks.
Okay.
They're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we just get a tipping point where people there was always that kind of backlash to like, why would you drink beer if it's got no alcohol in it? And I think the normal reason was, they taste pretty bad and average. But yeah, non-alcoholic beer is tasting really good because non-alcoholic drinks used to have the alcohol removed, which removed a lot of the sort of flavor compounds and and a lot of kind of what it made actually taste nice. But they've fairly recently found a yeast that's just really bad at its job. So it eats sugar and converts them, but doesn't actually output much alcohol at all. So you can actually brew a beer that only ends up at sort of 0.5% of alcohol.
Right. Okay.
Like Heaps Normal, a great example. Really tasty beers.
Yeah.
It tastes like beer, give you that kick. Would hardly notice not being there.
Yeah, right.
And on the flip side, you're seeing more restaurants offering non-alcoholic drinks.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I've been trying to, one of my New Year's resolutions, I guess, was to try to lay off the booze a bit and only drink on special occasions. And that's put me in a position where I'm sort of like selecting a few of these different interesting non-alcoholic drinks when I'm at a restaurant. And it's a cool experience, actually, because they're putting some attention into it. I went somewhere recently. I can't remember where it was, but I had some sort of beetroot kombucha or something like that they'd made with something I was eating, and it was so delicious. It was, you know, an interesting flavor. It was like a cocktail, but an interesting flavor, and it had a bit of tang and had a bit of earthiness from a beetroot. And yeah, so I don't know. I'm here for it. I like the idea of these things. I think the other thing that I'll mention about how non-alcoholic drinks are good, it's funny. This is just a silly little aside, but like trying not to drink too much, right? The other night, it was a Friday night, and my partner and I were at home. We were like, well, we're not going to the pub because we're not drinking at the moment. So let's sit here and do something. Let's like, whatever. And then it was like, well, it's a Friday night. Let's treat ourselves. And so I made us 2 glasses of soda water with like lemon and cucumber and ice in it that made it look like a cocktail, but it was actually soda water. It was just so stupid because it was like a Friday night. We're like, ooh, we're having these lovely little soda water cocktails on a Friday at home.
That's
I know, right?
So, yeah, well, I mean, you need to get yourself some non-alcoholic spirits, which you'll be able to watch some more on, but they're distilled. They're kind of hard to get your head around because the sort of non-alcoholic gins you can get do just sort of taste like flavored water.
Right.
But then when you mix them with some tonic and with some lime, they have the same sort of botanicals in them as gin, and suddenly they kind of come alive and taste really amazing. There's a great company, Liars, in Sydney who do an Italian Rosso vermouth style one and a gin and a tequila style one, all these different different spirits. So you can build non-alcoholic drinks. You're making yourself a non-alcoholic espresso martini. They're really interesting. It's another avenue and something you'll see more on drinks menus around the country soon, I think. And then, yes, like I said, the rise of the non-alcoholic matched wine is another option and something really cool that, if a restaurant has a program and they do it, and they do it well, it can be absolutely fascinating to do.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's interesting. Some good food predictions for 2022. Simon, that's all we've got time for. Absolutely always a pleasure. Thanks so much for giving us these predictions and joining me here on 2SER.
No worries, mate.